When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's not even football season, and it is always a Football Friday here on the Kenny and JT Show. Hall of Fame residency program, former Steeler great safety Hall of Famer Donnie Schell in studio with us today, and one of the best beat reporters in the NFL covering your Cleveland Browns for you, brownzone.com. Follow him on Twitter at Scott Petrak, joining us as he always does. Scotty, thanks for making time for us again. How are you this weekend?
I'm good.
Hey, thanks, for understanding on Fridays. Normally you were 4 o'clock, but the Hall of Fame is saying, hey, we got you a Hall of Famer at 4 o'clock, and for you to understand and move back, we appreciate that.
Oh, no sweat. Donnie Sullivan, that's a good one right there.
Yeah, some great stories from Donnie today, and all of these guys that we've had in. It's been a lot of fun, and everybody is out there. We were talking with Donnie Schell about this, Scotty, today. Everybody is out there looking for that 1974 draft class, right? When the Steelers ended up with 5 Hall of Famers coming from one draft class and free agency. Now that you've had some time to look back on what the Browns did, and you've read all the national articles, I'm sure, like I have, right, Scotty? Just your thoughts on how Andrew Brown did looking back, or excuse me, Andrew Berry did on the Browns draft class.
Yeah, I think it was solid, Kenny. It's tough to get too excited because they didn't have that first-round pick, right? You're not drafted until 54. And even then, you know, it's a D-line, a D-tackle, and a guard, right? So it's not a draft where I think people go nuts over and a lot of fireworks. But I thought it was solid. I liked the idea of Mike Hall Jr. out of Ohio State. I thought they really – we've talked about it. I thought D-tackle was, you know, as close to a need as you could get to on a roster that's pretty set. I like the fact that they got younger there. I really thought they needed a younger guard. And Zach Zinter from Michigan, I don't think, you know, he's not going to play this year unless somebody gets hurt, but I think he's a good pick for the future. And the draft is about the future. And Petonio and Teller are getting older. And their contracts run out after 2025. So I like those. And then you pick up a receiver late. You pick up another D tackle. You add a nickelback. You can never have enough corners. You get a linebacker who's highly productive in the SEC, has a chance to contribute on special teams right away, and then might even be in the mix to be that third linebacker in your base defense. So I thought it was pretty solid, if not spectacular.
All right, two things based on what you just said. Zach Zinter, if he's not hurt, is he a first-rounder from people that you've talked to, and how concerned are you about the off-the-field issues with Nathaniel Watson?
Yeah, actually, no on Zinter. I don't think the leg affected him all that much. And the reason I say that is it was a broken bone, or actually two broken bones.
Right.
But it wasn't an ACL tear, right? It wasn't anything significant.
Okay.
Maybe it affected him a little bit, but I don't think it was, you know, second to third round. Now, you know, you can make the argument that he wasn't able to perform at the combine. He wasn't able to work out at his pro day.
Right.
So he's kind of back of mind. Maybe he's not front of mind like some prospects would have been. But I don't think it was. I don't think it affected him hugely. And then Watson, you know, the Browns said they feel comfortable with this character. I actually talked to his high school coach this week. I haven't written the story yet. I'm still trying to talk to people from Mississippi State. But you know, he had something in high school. It was portrayed as a drag racing incident. Came over a hill, wrecked the car. There's a passenger that got injured. The high school coach said that he thought it was portrayed incorrectly. You know, he said they're out there, they're kind of, you know, they're kids, and it wasn't even he said drag racing wasn't a great description for it. He said the guy in the passenger is fine, and he and Nathaniel are really tight still. So he raved about Nathaniel Watson. You know, he's getting good reports out of Mississippi State. Guy was there for 6 years, got his master's. So obviously you have to pay attention to that, but it doesn't feel to me like the big deal, maybe when you just read, you know, a couple arrests, you get all, you know, oh my gosh, but it doesn't appear to be that significant.
Scotty, about a month ago at brownzone.com, you wrote a story about the Browns being able to pay some of these cornerbacks, defensive backs. This week you wrote an article about Greg Newsom's fifth-year option being picked up. What can you tell us about Greg Newsom's deal, and do you expect them to maybe extend him after this year?
Yeah, I mean, we expected them to pick up the option. Andrew Bayer doesn't like to talk about it publicly. Waits kind of close to the last minute. I think it was 2 days early this year. With Newsom, it's $13.37 million for 2025, which is not a ton to pay a starting caliber corner. It's right. Just not. You know, Denzel Ward's at $20 million. So I think that makes sense. You know, Newsom's making $2.4 this year. So for the next 2 years, you're paying him, you know, whatever that is, $7.5 million a year. That's, you know, that's nothing for a really good corner. So it makes all the sense in the world. Now, the extension is the question, right? I'm working under the assumption that they only pay two corners big money, and then they'll have to make a decision between Emerson and Newsom. And I would lean toward Emerson now. He's bigger. I think he's played really well the first 2 years, had a better first 2 years than Newsom did. But there's still time for this to play out, right? Emerson's under contract for two more years. Newsom's under contract for two more years. So I don't know if there has to be a rush to a decision because stuff happens, right? Guys get hurt, guys slump, guys struggle, guys get better, right? Newsom does have the versatility to play outside and inside that Emerson doesn't. He was a first-round pick, which, you know, kind of means something, even though Emerson has exceeded the third-round pick. So I wouldn't rule out an extension, but it doesn't feel like it's close or it's imminent to me, at least.
You think they'd go for Emerson over a Northwestern kid?
I think they might.
I would. No offense. No offense to the Wildcats, Scotty, but Emerson's one of the steals and one of the best draft picks, I think, that Barry's made.
There would be a good discussion. I think he's probably the best draft pick that Barry has, right? You know, Juwan Jones looks like he's going to be in that discussion, but he got hurt. I mean, he didn't finish the year last year. Mm-hmm. So he played, let's call it 10 games. You know, that's not a huge sample size. Delpit and JOK played really well last year, so they move up that list. But, you know, Emerson, for being a third-round pick, he's started a bunch of games 2 years. He's played really well. So right now I would give the edge toward Emerson as far as who would get that contract. I'm just saying I don't know if there's a rush, although – we know the Browns like to sign guys early, right? So maybe that decision, I think they have to wait until after this year for Emerson, right? I think you have to wait until after the third season. So I think we'll have movement with Emerson next offseason.
Is that one of the, what's the best way to put this with Andrew Berry? Is that one of his strong points, Scotty? Forecasting what the market might be in 2 or 3 years, jumping out a year early on signing an extension, getting them at a discount price like they did with Jerry Jeudy?
Definitely. And I think that's a strength. I know it's a focus for the personnel department, for the organization, is to read those tea leaves and see where the market's going. And he talked about it was Captain Raich, one of the assistant GMs, spent a lot of time talking about it during the draft, is why Michael Hall Jr. was such an important piece for them, and why they saw a run on D tackles, thought he was kind of the last one that did what they wanted their D tackles to do. And it's because look at that market, right? They were interested in Javon Hargrave last year in 2022 offseason, or I'm sorry, 2023 offseason, and the market skyrocketed. Yeah. This year, they were interested in Christian Wilkins. That market skyrockets. So you get Michael Jr., you get him on this second round contract. Rookie contract, you have control of him for 4 years, and there's such a gap in what he will get versus the top of the market that if he can rush the passer like they believe he can, like a Wilkins can, like a Hargrave can, then you're stealing money, right? It's a huge bargain. So they realize that, and then you talk about receiver. They got Amari Cooper. Remember when they traded for Amari Cooper, they picked up that $20 million contract.
Yeah.
It was a lot of money. And then Christian Kirk signs for like $19 million. All these guys start signing that aren't as good as Amari Cooper for close or the same or more money. And I do think that's an edge for Cooper or for the Browns. And Judy's a great example, Kenny, that maybe even 6 months from now, Jeudy is getting paid, you know, let's call him a number two behind Cooper, and he's getting paid so much less than what the top of the market guys will be paid.
I saw him Scotty at the Cavs game the other night. He's not a real big dude, Jerry Jeudy. He's skinny, man. I mean, he's. I know he has.
You don't
struggled.
Have to be big to run a 4.45.
I guess, but Scotty, from people that you talk to, I know the Browns like him. What are your feelings on him not living up to the expectations, and anybody else that you've talked to about Jerry Jeudy, who could be the number one if they get rid of Cooper?
Yeah, that's interesting. If they slot him as the number one after Cooper leaves, right?
Yeah.
Whenever that is, right? It doesn't have to be next year. Whenever that is. Do they let it go with him as a one, or do they feel like he's better off as a number two? That'll be interesting to see how they handle that. Kenny, from what people are saying, the situation wasn't great in Denver, right? They had instability at the coaching staff. They had instability at quarterback. I'm not sure they used him in the best possible way they could have. Last year with Russell Wilson, it's a really conservative game plan, and Russ didn't throw to the receivers a lot, right? So Jeudy, is hurt by that. Having said that, he hasn't been what you want a first-round pick to be, but the Browns believe he has that talent. They believe that, he's just scratching the surface. They liked him coming out of college. They liked him even when he was with Denver. Now, the knock is what you just said, Kenny. He's not big and strong, right? So he has to create his opportunities other ways, and they feel he does that with his route running, with the separation, right? So he might not be the best contested catch guy. He probably has to work on getting off jams at the line better. But if you move him around, if you give him space, he can create even more space. And that's where he's dangerous, whether it's, in short, intermediate, and also deep. He can make some deep plays. He's good with the ball in his hands after catch, which is an area that the Browns aren't great in, right? Cooper's not a great after-catch guy. He's great catching the ball. He's great down the field. You think Elijah Moore can be good at that, but he wasn't great at that last year. So I think Jeudy does give them an element that they were missing, and they're high on him. And, I talked to somebody that was with them in Denver and not down on the kid at all. Like, likes him, thinks he's, can be even better than he has been.
I agree with that. And the coaching carousel and quarterback carousel in Denver didn't do him any favors, but you mentioned Elijah Moore. You already have Elijah Moore. Isn't Jerry Jeudy Elijah Moore 1.0?
I don't think so. They both are like maybe quicker than fast, right? Even though Judy's got some downfield speed. I know he's skinny, but he's taller than Moore. I think he's got a higher ceiling. I think he's got more potential, right? First round pick versus second round pick. I think he opens it up better than Moore does. And, when we talk about downfield. Now, it's interesting. They can use both of them in the slot. They can use both of them outside. And you think of Moore as an inside guy, but, they think Jeudy can play inside, I believe. So I don't think they're similar enough where it's an overlap. And you do have to remember that Elijah Moore is entering the last year of his contract as well.
Okay. Scotty, one of the things that, and this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, basically, but this spring ball with the UFL, I don't know anyone who's watching it. Do you think the Browns are watching it and there might be a player or two that they might want to pluck from spring football that might make the big team?
I know they monitor it. I don't know if they sit around and watch it. I don't even know when the games are. But I'm sure they have film and they watch it. And there was a guy last year that they signed. I don't think he made the roster, but they had in camp that was off one of those, one of the spring league rosters. So, they scour every possible avenue. So, yeah, I'm sure they had someone in their personnel department who is in charge of making sure they're not missing anybody in that week.
Happy to have with us Scotty Petrak, brownzone.com. Check him out there if you're a Browns fan on a daily basis. Great website for Browns information and, of course, anything breaking. You can find him on Twitter, at Scott Petrak. All right, Scott, I'm looking at some of these other grades. How well did the AFC North do as a whole? And because of the lack of draft picks, did the Browns finish in last place in their division with the draft grades?
Probably. I think the Bengals had a couple of, not head scratches, but picks that you can question. They added a tackle, which I know they need offensive line help, but know, they have two tackles right now, right? So they probably have a decision to make there. You know, they drafted a tight end with an injury history. If he turns out healthy, then it's probably a hit, but it's a risk. You know, so, but they had more volume than the Browns, so I'd probably go Bengals 3. And then I thought Pittsburgh and Baltimore did a really good job, like they usually do. You know, Baltimore sits and waits, and somebody talented falls to them. Pittsburgh obviously was motivated and to go improve that offensive line. I'm sure having Arthur Smith as your coordinator is part of that, right? They know they're going to run the ball a bunch. He's probably looking for specific types of linemen. That's been an issue with the Steelers. So, you know, they made sure they were going to do that, and then they go get a receiver. Baltimore went heavy on corners, which they needed to get younger there, and they tend to draft corners well. So I tend to like what those two teams do, and this year's no exception.
I looked at what the Steelers did, Scotty. They addressed the line. That's been their biggest weakness. And so they took, what was it, a guard tackle, who'll probably play tackle for them, and a center out of West Virginia to go along with the two quarterbacks that they added to the roster this offseason in Fields and Wilson. When we look at the quarterbacks, they're still last in the division in quarterbacks if Deshaun Watson is healthy. And maybe even if he's not, with Jameis Winston, maybe. I don't know. Aren't they? I mean, isn't Pittsburgh, even though their defense is good and they address things and got like A's and A-pluses in the draft, aren't they still dead last when it comes to quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think that's definitely safe to say. Now, I like Justin Fields, but he probably doesn't even start there, right?
Right.
And... you know, they didn't pick up the fifth-year option, right? So he's not a sure thing. Maybe it feels like I like him more than other people do. But even if you like Fields, the Steelers are fourth. I don't know how they're not fourth in the quarterback. You know, assuming I would assume, you know, that's assuming Watson's healthy. If it's Winston, then I feel like it's, you know, then it's up for grabs.
Scott, earlier this week, somebody leaked out these pictures. I don't know if it's real or not. I don't know if it's a real story or not. Are they gaining any ground on a dome stadium in Brook Park?
Well, I mean, I don't know if those renderings are real. You know, I'm sure there's elements to them that are legitimate. Plus, even if they are, like, even if those are the renderings that the Browns, like, are showing people, mm-hmm. state senators and what have you, you know, things change before it happens, right? Like, I don't know the last time I saw a rendering that I actually saw the thing, and I was like, oh, it looks exactly the same. Right? You know, I mean, there's just flowers, there's fireworks, I mean, you know. Or trees, you know. I don't know how much you can buy into. I think it'd be different if I were looking at, you know, like a big screen presentation. And I'm hoping sometime soon I get to see that. You know what the Browns presentation is. It feels like there's steps toward Brook Park, but you can't eliminate the renovation downtown. I think that's still a thing. I think it's still a possibility. We talked about it, guys. I can't get my head past the difference in money. Right? It's let's call it $1.2 billion to renovate the stadium on the lakefront, and $2.4 billion just for the dome, right? That's not all the stuff around the dome, the hotels and the restaurants and all that, right? So it's a lot of money. So even and if the Browns want to split it 50-50 with taxpayers, you're looking at $600 million that they're asking from the taxpayers. And I think that's significant. I really do. And that's why my default is the lakefront, because – I think there's better uses for your tax dollars, unless you convince me otherwise. So I think downtown is still, I think still in play, but you're seeing steps toward, okay, if it is Brook Park, here's what it's going to have to be, because it's going to be a lot of work. You got to build a stadium, you got to change the, you know, interstates. Like, there's a lot of work that goes into new everything versus just a significant renovation. There'll be other stuff around downtown, but you know, they have the land and they have, like, the base of the stadium.
Nothing screams, we don't know what the hell we're doing, like fireworks outside of a dome stadium that no one can see. He's right, though. I saw it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's what I thought it might have been. That's what I thought it might. That might not have been part of the Browns presentation.
Oh, my God. That's classic. That's great stuff. Scott Petrak with us here on the Kenny and JT Show. Scotty, the Haslams, you've covered them long enough now. You've talked to them. You've been in press conferences with them, right? How are they viewed? throughout the NFL?
That's a good question.
Yeah, right?
I think it's probably favorable. Kenny, and I say that because they tend to make, I think they make good business decisions overall as far as Pilot Flying J made a ton of money and they sold it for a real ton of money, right, to Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
And they're rolling in it, and then they buy the Crew, and the Crew wins the championship, and they buy part of the Bucks, and the Bucks haven't been good since they haven't had playoff success since they bought it, but still, right, they're venturing out. I think if you own multiple teams or teams in multiple leagues, that probably raises your profile, raises the level of, you know, I guess credibility.
Right.
Gives you some cachet, right? But, you know, there's probably owners that, I don't know, you would hope that there'd be owners that didn't appreciate the cost-plussing that was going on at Pilot Flying J, right? Just people went to jail and, you know, the Haslam's denied knowledge, but it's their company. You know, I think that still hangs over everything they do, at least in my mind. You know, the Deshaun Watson deal, I think it did rub some owners the wrong way. I think they get past that. You know, I don't think they carry that grudge forever because it hasn't reset the market.
Nope.
Not everybody's getting those guaranteed contracts. So I think overall they're probably viewed fine.
Scotty, if you're viewing the ownership and you're talking about that Deshaun Watson deal, what about the general manager, Andrew Berry? In regards to maybe Caserio down at the Houston Texans, it's arguable that either one, they're part of the deal because the Browns made the playoffs, but they didn't do it because of the fact that we traded for Deshaun Watson. You did it because Andrew Berry put together a team that somehow, some way, with a fourth team quarterback that came off the couch, made their way into the postseason. What are your thoughts on Andrew Berry?
Well, I think he's highly respected across the league. Just if you get to know Andrew, you know, I think he's an upstanding guy. I think he's a likable guy. He's certainly smart. He spent time with Bill Polian in Indianapolis, and that helps. You know, he works with Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts now in Indianapolis. Howie Roseman, he was under him, you know, between stints with the Browns, and he's one of the best in the business. So, you know, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, who's now the Vikings GM, came from Cleveland, worked under Andrew Berry. So I think Andrew Berry is highly respected. When it comes to the job he's done, there's plenty of hits and misses, right? We've mentioned the good draft picks. There's been some bad draft picks. There's been some bad free agency signings, but that happens. And, you know, he's not afraid to take risks. He's not afraid to make trades. I like the aggression. I think that's the way you have to be in the NFL. You know, he's added stability. I think he's going to get this contract extension, right? That's Haslam's has said that he is. I think he stabilized the organization, and you're right. They lost the Deshaun Watson trade, right? I mean, unless Watson goes and wins the Super Bowl,
right?
Right, then we'll have to recalibrate. But right now, they're trailing by 30 points. So, but it doesn't matter because, or I don't think it matters nearly as much because they went to the playoffs, like you said, and because the roster is really good despite not having those number one picks. Right, so he's figured it out a way. Now it helps that the Haslam's are willing to spend a bunch of money, and you know, spend cash, and that helps all those things. But he's figured out ways, and whatever deficiencies he has, I think he's gone the other way. Like, I don't think he would say they trade for receivers because they can't draft a receiver. But they've had some issues drafting receivers, but then they trade for guys to balance that. And Amari Cooper's been really good, right? They had patience with David Njoku, so. I think there's plenty of positives with Andrew Berry, and if you just look at the state of the team right now, I don't know how that's not a big plus in his favor.
All right, last thing, what's up with the Stefanski extension?
Yeah, I think it's the same as Berry. I think it's coming. They say it's coming, and this is totally me speculating. You know, it's going to be a big raise, especially for Stefanski, right? You see some of the coaching numbers that are out there, right? I think Andy Reid just signed. It might have been $25 million. I thought I saw for Andy Reid. You know, you got Harbaugh, you got Sean Payton, Jim Harbaugh. I mean, these guys are signing big money, and I don't think Kevin Stefanski was making huge money in that first contract. He's never been a head coach before. Well, now he's a 2-time coach of the year, gone to the playoffs twice. It's going to be a big race. Like, and I don't know the numbers, but it could be 3 times what he's making right now. Right. So So that probably takes some time to negotiate that type of deal.
Scotty, we always appreciate the time and the insight. Top notch, as always. Keep up the fantastic work at brownzone.com, and we'll talk to you again next week, all right?
Thanks, guys.
Scotty Petrak, Browns beat reporter. Check him out on Twitter on a daily basis for instant updates with your Cleveland Browns. It's at Scott Petrak.